Okay, good evening, everybody. I'm David Kong. I'm going to be talking about the question that's come up the past few months or so, having to do with bourbon, American whiskeys, and a few other things, but particularly those issues, those items. And just by way of introduction, the CRC was approached by a company to give them hashgacha on their whiskeys that they make. We went to visit the company, and in fact, in this case, two people went, Rabbi Fishbein and I went together to visit this company. And in talking with them, Rabbi Fishbein asked a pretty standard question, which is the ownership of this company Jewish? Which has relevance to certain halachas, as we're going to be talking about tonight. And in most cases, companies are very proud to tell you if they're Jewish. They think that gives them a discount, and you know, they get in quicker with the Jews if we're owned by Jewish people. Actually, it's usually to their detriment. They don't know that, but usually to their detriment. In this case, they were well aware of it, and they were, of course, yes, our company is owned by one Jewish man. And that was very clear. And what came out, I'm giving you now the short version, is that this is a company that makes whiskey, many products that are chametz, and it therefore presents an issue to us, because if a Yid owns chametz over Pesach, that chametz is also forever, not just to him. No one is allowed to eat or have any benefit from that chametz forever. And in the case of whiskey, whiskey is aged for many years, which is to say, if I buy a bottle from them, they've owned it themselves already for, let's say, 3 years or 5 years or however many years it is. That means there's a Jewish person owned it for that many years. It's what we call chametz shavua of Pesach, chametz that was owned by Yid on Pesach, and no one's allowed to drink it or have any benefit from it. Rabbi Fishbein is a big optimist. So he was like, okay, it's okay, we'll figure this out. I'm sure it's not going to be a problem. Let's continue with our visit. We'll talk about some details, and everything's going to be okay. We'll figure it out. Yeah, we'll work on it, but it's okay. You know, we've been through problems like this beforehand. But the more and more that we looked into it, problem was not going away. So just for a little history before we get into the actual Shiloh, at a certain point, the CRC basically gave up, and we were convinced that it does present the problem. This company owns hundreds of brands of whiskey, and Rabbi Fishbein brought it to the attention of other hashgachas, other major hashgachas. There were quite a number of phone calls with them and their poskim and their administrators and different people involved, and it was decided that no one could come up with a good reason, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight, with a good reason why in fact it's mutter, and therefore we publicized that in fact people should be careful not to buy these products. So here I'm going to talk tonight, excuse me? Which products are they? It's quite a list of products. I don't have the paper in front of me. It's about 50, 75 brands of products, primarily American type. We have a list. We have a list of products that, of items that the company makes. What it had is that this Jewish person got into this business about 20 years ago. He's then bought up some other companies, and he's now quite a big player in the whiskey industry. I mean, you know, quite a lot of. I'm not a drinker, but that's why it's on the tip of my fingers. But it's quite a number of. Most of them are American type products, like rye whiskey and bourbon, those kind of things. I'm going to share with you some of the questions that we went through, some of the issues that there were, so you could just get a feel for what was discussed. And one of the questions we get asked the most, since we let people know this, is. Okay, you told me not to buy, I shouldn't go buy any of this stuff because it's chametz shavua Pesach, but what about if I have it already? And, you know, this, it seems that for some people, that's quite a serious question, of people with hundreds or thousands of dollars worth of product sitting in their basement, and it was a very serious shiloh. So, the questions we're going to talk about whether it should be mutter or aser, we really address those questions as, is it maybe mutter, and we don't even have to tell anybody. But in fact, for many people, this shiloh has become, well, maybe it's mutter, and I can, now that I have it already, somehow I can sell it, or I can use it, etc. Okay. One of the most unusual questions, we'll try to do it in some kind of order, was someone said, well, many people said, how do you know the person is Jewish? How can you be sure that this person, that the owner really is a Jewish person? Well, he said, well, everyone says that he's Jewish. It's all over the place that he's a Jewish person. In fact, Rabbi Fishbein tracked down a childhood friend of his son-in-law, his rabbi, well, rabbi, a friend of the family who's a rabbinic person who's a friend of the family, Rabbi Fishman checked in all kinds of people who know this guy. Since he found one person who lived around the corner from him and is a religious person and has a birthday, he's born 2 weeks after him, he knows him his whole life. He's found like 100 people who know this person who all, you know, will swear up and down that he's Jewish. And so one rabbi with a very creatively said, well, you know, if someone wants to claim that they're Jewish, we don't always trust the person to that effect. We don't always trust the person when he comes in and just walks in and says, hi, I'm Jewish, I want shlishis. We don't always trust the person. And he says, in this case, so maybe we shouldn't trust him. And it was really put down, because in this case, there were so many reasons to believe that he is. There's so many sides of saying this, that he's Jewish. And he proudly told us, even though it was to his detriment, they knew good and well that it would be better to say, oh, Jewish, no, it was a mistake. He was Hindu. It was a mistake. But they knew not to say that, but they'll keep repeating. A more realistic consideration is, there are some places who say that these rules of chametz avol of a Pesach, chametz is asur, that's only asur for a person who cares about the punishment. What I mean to say is, chametz owned by a yid is asur on Pesach, is asur after Pesach, as a chazal gave it as a punishment. They said, if you don't get rid of your chametz before Pesach, we're going to make it asur after Pesach. It's like a threat. You better get it, or else we're going to punish you by not letting anybody buy it from you or anybody drink it. But if this is a person who doesn't care anything, he doesn't care anything about religious items. Jewishness doesn't mean anything to him. He's really far removed from any religious practice. So that person couldn't care less that we make his food usher. So maybe to such a person, place can say, maybe to such a person, the rules of Kamar Trouble and Pesach don't apply. There are those who say that. Again, it's a rejected opinion. Most Pesachim do not accept that. And the fact that the person personally, he in his own personal practice doesn't care, his own personal life doesn't care about being Jewish, doesn't make a difference. Okay. Another thought was, maybe this person is in fact the sole owner, but it's set up in a corporate structure. The company is, the setup of the company is set up as a corporation. Corporations are what they call a legal entity. They're as if an independent body. And maybe such a body owns chametz, it wouldn't be asur after Pesach. And the example of it, the reason to think like that is because the thing is, if Hekdesh owns chametz, it's not asur after Pesach. Hekdesh is allowed to own chametz. Hekdesh, the Beis HaMikdash, is allowed to own chametz on Pesach because there's no person. It's not a person, it's an entity. So if Hekdesh is allowed to own chametz, maybe a corporation is allowed to own chametz also. There's, again, you're going to hear this a few times, there is such a shita. It's basically a rejected shita, especially in a case like this, where there's just one owner. In a case where there'd be, you know, 5 million shareholders, and a Jew owns 10 shares, you would say, okay, he's not really the owner. But in this case, he's it. They say when they wrote to us, they would say, our shareholder, our, you know, single shareholder. It's not like there's lots of people out there at big meetings, there's just one guy. A very scary person who they're all afraid to talk to. he's the big boss, you know. We thought, Larry Fishman and I thought, this is a big company. You have to see this. This is a huge operation. And we only saw parts of it. We only saw, you know, one element of the company. The parts that we started to learn about, it was a really big company. And we found out that this is like a side business. You know, this person is really into all kinds of other things. We're just seeing, you know, one little part of his, you know. So what's interesting is, he's quite a philanthropist. The person who owns this is quite a philanthropist to Jewish and non-Jewish causes alike. Some of the family is a little closer to religious practice than he is, and encourages him to give towards religious, he does, to a certain amount to religious organizations as well. But he is quite a philanthropist. We didn't ask him for a donation. Another question, an interesting question, before we actually get to the actual chametz, we'll talk about some shilas in the chametz itself. The question was like this. We know that this person has, these whiskeys are asur. So one rabbi said, maybe we don't have to tell anybody. The two of us know it, and the two of us can't drink that stuff. We can't drink it. But maybe we don't have to tell anybody. Why? Because Chametz Avol of a Pesach is only asur midrabanan. The Torah doesn't say it's asur. The Chacham says it's asur. When something is only asur midrabanan, then it may be that if you don't know about it, you may have done nothing wrong by eating it. If you're not allowed to eat something that's asur drabanan because you're going against what the rabbi said, the rabbi said don't eat it, you are, in their words, rebelling against the rabbis, you're standing up to them and saying, I'm going to do it anyhow, you've done the wrong thing. Maybe if you don't know about it, maybe there's nothing wrong with that. Maybe you didn't do anything wrong. If you didn't know, you didn't know. Maybe it's not such a big deal. You know, if you eat something that's treif, then hey, if you ate something that's treif, you did the wrong thing. Hashem doesn't want you to eat that. But just the rabbis, maybe the rabbis didn't insist on that in this case. There is some basis to such a thought. Again, in this case, it did not apply. Okay. I'm now going to turn to the whiskey itself. And I'm going to try to give over. There are four ways that the whiskey can become chametz. And what I'm going to give a little detail. What I mean is like this. I told you that whiskey is usher if it would be aged. If the whiskey sits for, they make the whiskey today, and they hold it for 5 years, it'll be aged over Pesach, and it'll be usher. That, of course, applies to most whiskeys. So now, within the whiskeys, I'm going to break down the question into four parts. And within those four parts of how it could become usher, we're going to then see some more shaitas. Okay, I don't think we're going to make it all the way through, but yes, go ahead.
Quick question. I seem to recall in the 60s and 70s, this whole tumult happened also.
Yes.
And it was initially distributorships that held it forever. And many of the churches were Jewish.
Yes.
And in fact, if I recall correctly, Rav Asher was not so close about the whole thing.
Okay, so actually you're right. You're right about two parts. You're right about two things. Okay. One is, this question, exactly this question came up with another large Jewish-owned whiskey company, came up approximately 20 years ago, and at that time, exactly the same thing that is happening today happened then, which is, they told people, don't eat products made by the following company because he's a Jewish person who owns chametz. When the owner of that company heard, when they approached him and said, do you know, he had a relationship with Orthodox rabbi. He said, do you know that people won't be able to eat your product because of this? He said, okay, I'll sell my chametz from now on. And since then, for the past 20 years, through more than one rabbi, he's been selling his chametz. I mean, the rabbi is not in that city anymore. He continues to sell his chametz. So that was resolved, which is to say, product made until that day, whatever it was not permitted. But from then and on, I mean, by the stuff that we're drinking now, has already, and Mechir was chametz to it. Okay, and we've since learned of other places, smaller people who did the same thing. So in one sense, that's the same shaira and was dealt with, it was carried out properly in that time. Rabbi Fishbein is hard at work trying to get this person to sell his chametz. Okay, that's one of his jobs, is to try to convince the person the people we're dealing with now to sell their chametz again. To do the same thing. You know. But the other part of the question, which is distributors, is something I really wasn't going to talk about. But people who distribute chametz is a much smaller and more narrow shaira. A distributor is to say, whiskey company makes chametz, makes their whiskey. It takes them 12 years to make it. The distributor holds it for 3 weeks. It comes into his warehouse, and it goes out of his warehouse. So if it happens to be that he owned it over Pesach, it would be an issue. But let's say now, at this time in the year, that's not a problem anymore. By now, we're in the middle, it's in June, his stuff from the head for Pesach is long gone. He doesn't have that anymore. So it's a very small question that for a few weeks after Pesach, you think about maybe the distributor owned it on Pesach. These products are also forever, because whenever he made it, if he made it in November, he's going to hold it for 5 years afterwards, meaning he's going to hold it over Pesach. That's why it's a more complicated question. Okay, in making whiskey, there are four ways that the whiskey could have a problem of chametz over Pesach, and they are: whiskey is usually made out of grain. If that grain is chametz, like rye whiskey, like scotch, that the main grain is a grain that becomes chametz, then the whiskey would be usher. Secondly, let's say bourbon. Bourbon is made out of corn. So people say, well, bourbon is okay. Doesn't have it. Corn is not chametz. It's not a problem. That's true. But even when you make something like bourbon, it'll be 50 or 60% corn, but it'll be 20, 30, 40% of rye or wheat. Something that can become chametz. Even if you have something that's completely not chametz, it'll be pure corn, okay, or corn and rice without any chametz mixed into it. But in the way that you make whiskey, you create your whiskey, you then remove the alcohol out of the whiskey, leaving some water behind, and that water is used to make tomorrow's whiskey. Excuse me. So today's whiskey, which is made of chametz, the water from that will be left over for tomorrow to make a corn, can be used to make a corn whiskey tomorrow. So even if the grains have no chametz in them at all, you might still have leftovers from yesterday's chametz mixed into it. And lastly is that when you make whiskey, in order to start the process off, you put, even if you start with corn or rice, to start the process off, you add in something called malted barley. You add in barley to help break down the starch into sugar, and that in itself would make the food, make it hot. Okay. I'm going to apologize to you. I'm going to go quickly through this section here. I don't know if you want to hear more or less of it, but I'm going to mention in 5 minutes. Okay, so we're going to be finished at that point. And Rav Fishman is going to take all questions afterwards. I assume you got them already. Okay. Okay, I'll do that one first. Okay. Very famous kula about whiskey. There were those who said, the way you make whiskey is you create your whiskey. It's a mix that's now about 15% alcohol. At the beginning, when it's created, it's about 15% alcohol. You then go through a process called distillation, in which you boil the liquid in a way that the alcohol boils out and the water stays behind. As that alcohol boils out, you capture it and you turn it back into a liquid. So that process of, and that makes it stronger to be 40 or 50 or 60% the way people like to drink whiskey. So there are those who said that process of distillation, what happens, you have a pot of liquid over here, you have a pot of alcohol over here, but the liquid seems to be invisible as it goes from one to the other. It's a vapor as it passes from one to the other. So maybe in din, the alcohol that's sitting over here has no relationship to the liquid that was over here first. Since it went through a vapor stage in between, it's not considered, it doesn't have any connection. That's chametz, and this is not chametz. This is as if it appeared from no place. There are those who say that. And you should know, many Rabbanim who are asked the question, what should I do if I own, we have, Brian Fishman's friend again, $300,000 worth of whiskey from this company, that when that person turned to his Rav and said, what should I do, the Rabbanim will tell those people and say, in your case, we'll rely on the fact that there are those who hold what they call Zeyek Yamo, that the vapors that are appearing over there have no connection to the original Chametz, and it's not considered Chametz that was on Pesach. Okay, there are those who say that. Most people do not accept that, and for sure, the Chachamim don't accept that. And it's really comes from Rishonim. In the days when distillation was discovered, about 1,000 years ago, when they first came up with distillation, the Poskim could talk about it, the Rishonim talk about it, and they say that things that are, if you distill something with heat, then the end product is considered to have the same status as the original. So the liquid that you boiled up and turned into a vapor and then turned back into liquid, that second liquid, the alcohol, it has the same status as the original. Excuse me?
What is considered heat?
What is considered heat? The differentiation is not the exact temperature. They're differentiating between something done through heat like this is, through warm, as opposed to condensation, like that you'd find in... Yes, that... It would be interesting, if you would do it in vacuum, that's not how they do it, that's not how you distill alcohol, but if you would, you'd have to think about it. And maybe then in that case it would be more different. Okay, no, there are definitely things that are done like that. I don't know if alcohol, drinking alcohol is done like that. It could be.
Beer flavor distilled under a very low temperature.
Okay, then that's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. The Rishonim we talk about it are differentiating between distillation and... the condensation, like on your shower window, there's condensation on the window, that does not have the status of what it came from. If you have an interesting question, you may have a point here.
By the way, regarding the sugar, you mentioned
it. Why won't you say butter barrel? If I make it, I'm going to get to that. I'm going to make sure, if I can, I'm going to get to that. Okay, so, we'll see. Okay, we're going to ask the rabbi over there if I have an extension on my mincha. I think that's later. So there are those who are making and say that it's what we call Zeyed Alma. It's not connected to the original thing. Again, look, I feel that people do not rely on that. It's not accepted lahalacha. For a person who's stuck, a person who owns a lot of it, they should ask their own law. We don't tell people they should do. Another question was, what the person just mentioned, the last child I was going to mention was, the bourbon is, let's say, 60% corn, 40% rye, so why don't we say it's not the rye? What's really behind that question? The Shulchan Aruch says that if someone has chametz she'avel av Pesach, it's not mutter unless it's batel b'shishim. They can't eat it unless it's batel b'shishim. Whether it was diluted before Pesach, on Pesach, or after Pesach, he gets three cases. In all three cases, you can't eat it unless it's batel b'shishim. So if I have some liquid piece of bread, and it got mixed in with something else, and it was only over Pesach, it wouldn't be much less than batel b'shishim. So if you read the Shulchan Aruch, being batel b'roiv is not going to help us. Just the fact that there's more corn than there is rye is not going to help us. However,
we have batel b'roiv in the example again. That's kind of a victory to Allah. But if you have a parable of something before Pesach, it's batel b'roiv.
If it's something, it's a taruvus of liquids mixed together, then it's not batel b'roiv. It needs to be batel b'shishim.
Before Pesach?
Before Pesach. There is such a concept of batel b'roiv where we have distinct objects. We have a bunch of things on the store shelf. One of them is chametz and one of them not. There are times when we would say something is batel b'roiv. But as a rule, if things are mixed together, it needs to be batel b'shishim in order to be mutter. So there are those who suggested I skipped something. The Magen Avraham says, the Shulchan Aruch said it has to be batel b'shishim. No, even if it's batel b'roiv, it's good enough. Even batel b'roiv is good enough. And there are those who said, so, the Magen Avraham is talking about all three cases. The Shulchan Aruch mentioned three cases, before, during, and after Pesach, and he means all three cases. But the truth is that the Gra and the Mishnah Berurah say that that's not true. When the Magen Avraham said you could be makel if it's batel b'roiv, he only meant the last case, which is where it was mixed in after Pesach. If it was mixed in before or during Pesach, it's not good. Even the Magen Avraham is not makel, and it needs to be batel b'shishim. I'm not going to explain that. Okay. I'll just summarize that. I'll summarize the whole thing because we're going to miss mincha. I'm going to summarize and then say, we went through, I counted up in my notes here, I didn't speak them all out, 14 different possibilities that we considered as to why these products should be mutter. 14 different reasons why that people can come up with maybe this product is really kosher and really you could use it and it's okay. At the same time, the person who were involved, there were at least 7 persons who were involved in this question, unanimously said, none of this is enough. None of these 14 reasons are good enough to tell people that you should therefore be able to buy these products. Therefore, we told the public that no, you should not buy these products. We don't recommend you buy these products. At the same time, some of these 14 reasons have a certain merit to them, and the person who has the shayla, someone who's standing in their house, and they have, $500 worth of product, and to them that's a significant amount, should turn to their Rav, because in many of them who we've spoken to, who were involved in these phone calls, have said, I would make in this case, I make it for a specific person, I'll tell him he can't drink it, but he could sell it to someone, and they had different, ways of approaching it, and we said in our alert, we continue to recommend people to speak to the Rabbanim, because there is definitely what to speak about, of a person possibly being make of a deal. Thank you.